Well, we're doing that. Kansas City won the Super Bowl. They have a wonderful black quarterback, and that's going to be part of our discussion with Norman Otis Richmond, the bluesologist. And Norman actually chose that singer. It isn't Fats Domino. It's Wilbert Harrison. And I'll ask you that, Norman. Why do you prefer Wilbert?
Oh, it's not a question of preferring Wilbert. It's a question of that was the first one that I remember was that one was because that was high on my father's playlist. Yeah. And years later, I remember I met a cousin on my father's side of the family who actually left their family actually left Louisiana and went to Kansas City, and she grew up in Kansas City. So when I met her, uh-huh. she gave me all these stories about Kansas City, and she was a very urbane woman. So yeah. she could talk about the top and the bottom of Kansas City. So I enjoyed her company because she was mm-hmm. a great storyteller, mm-hmm. and she told me a lot of good things about Kansas City, which is a place that I have never been.
I have to say, I think I was in Kansas City. I've certainly been in Kansas, and like they say, you just keep going when you're if you're crossing. You just step on the gas pedal. However, Kansas City has a lot of history, and particularly involving the issue of slavery and the struggle to end slavery. Kansas City's in Missouri. Phil Conlon is restless to tell us all, but the state of Kansas.
Didn't Trump say it was in Kansas?
You beat him to it. Go ahead, Phil. Phil wants to say it.
You said it all, Otis. Donald Trump, it turns out, doesn't know his American geography, even though he's the president of the country. And he congratulated the great people of Kansas. And I thought, well, you know what? Maybe he just lost the Missouri vote.
They shouldn't put these cities on the border. So, again, it's Norman Otis Richmond, the bluesologist. And, Norman, it was a victory yesterday, Kansas City Chiefs, and it highlighted for me something really important. This year, the MVP is Mr. Jackson. I can't say his first name. Was chosen. He's a quarterback for Baltimore, and he was unquestionably the best quarterback, a young black quarterback. I think he must be one of the youngest to ever win the MVP. And then you have Patrick Mahomes, Kansas City. Everybody says he's now in terms of skill level, he's a prodigy. Which takes us to this shocking thing, that the NFL celebrates itself this year with the 100th anniversary of professional football. And they chose the 10 greatest of every position, linebacker, running back, wide receiver, quarterback. And guess what? There are 10 quarterbacks, and not one of them is black.
Yes, right.
Now, and by the way, they have an answer. They said, well, you know, we didn't let black players be quarterback until so recently that the numbers that you have to have in order to look like a marvelous, great, terrific, super sensational quarterback, you can't get those kind of numbers unless you play 15, 20 years.
Yep.
I should say 15.
And well, I think that's the reason why there were so many African American quarterbacks came to Canada.
Yes.
Including the brother of Doug Williams, who played in the Canadian Football League. I remember I met him when he came up here, and he couldn't get a job because, first of all, I think he was only 5'11", and you know the whole height thing,
yep.
Especially at that particular time, he had to be at least 6 feet, supposedly.
That is some stupid idea that you couldn't throw over the linemen. But all those linemen are bigger than the quarterbacks. And we watch games where tall guys have the ball batted in their face. Yesterday in the Super Bowl, both quarterbacks had the ball batted into their face by huge linemen. But I want to ask you this question. Shouldn't we have a movement for the unknown black superstars that were never allowed to play the positions that they obviously would have excelled at?
Well, I think there is the black press, and the black press, if there, I used to argue with some very good friends of mine that always put down the black press. They said, you know, unless it appeared in the New York Times, Washington Post, Toronto Star, Globe and Mail, or Lamont in France, you hadn't really made it. But there's a whole history of I guess 1823 maybe. I forgot when the Freedom Journal came out, and all of that history has been recorded, but it's not recognized because it was in the quote unquote Negro press, which doesn't count. I remember one time a good Jewish friend of mine walked up to me and told me that now you finally made it. I was publishing the Toronto Star for the first time. And I reminded him, you know, I had been writing for Contrast and for Share and for, you know, the Black American was a newspaper, which was a newspaper in New York, and the Soul magazine in Los Angeles since like 1973. But it took me, once I was publishing the Toronto Star, that's when he recognized me as a writer. So that's a serious attitude. And this guy was not I'd never considered him to be a racist.
Yeah. Well, he probably, you know, unfortunately, he's just saying spontaneously what is common opinion, right?
Yep.
And because we ought to point out, we had... there used to be the phenomenon of, and maybe it's still pretty much true, of the token black writer, actually token black artist. There used to be, you know, one of each. There couldn't be two. In Hollywood, there could be one, but there couldn't be five or six.
Correct. One Michael Jackson, one Frankie Lyman, one Diana Ross, one Billie Holiday. Roberto Clemente, and then, you know, there would be some fools that would say Roberto Clemente wasn't black because he was a Puerto Rican. You know, he was a Latino. He wasn't from the tribe of Shabazz, Black American. You know.
Yeah. No, that's and on this matter, I want something on my mind. I've spoken to you. You and I have talked a lot about how Black Americans basically have come to be recognized through performance. And some people say, well, you see, they're heavily represented sports, entertainment, or at least known. But isn't that a result of transparency where you give that individual a chance, like Jesse Owens, who lived in Ohio, and therefore he was able to compete, and he showed he's the world's best. Same with entertainers. Once they get on the platform, people say, "Oh, that's the one I want." So it's in areas where they can't deny performance that Black Americans have come to be known.
Oh, I agree. In terms, I remember as Gerald Horn used to always point out the fact that if the objective reality is if you put a group of human beings in a 50 meters, 75 yards, meters, 100 meters, and who comes out first objectively, there's a tape, you know, there's clocks and there's cameras.
Yeah.
You know, the fact is that, you know, Justin Gatlin at one time, Donovan Bailey, and this young guy from... I think he's from Georgia right now, is the fastest human being alive now. And you can prove that concretely. It's no ifs, ands, or buts because you have a camera and you see them running. You know, now you might say he was on some sort of enhanced...
Also, it's transparent. People see it.
Right.
And by the way, it proves also this idea that, oh, well, you know, we can't have them do this because the fans, like they used to say in Washington, Washington, D.C. is a southern territory. The owner said, I can't have black players because my audience is white, blah, blah. Well, it turned out that once they had a chance to see black players performing as like the Washington Redskins, everybody said, oh, let's have more because it turns out the people do want to see And it wasn't the masses who were holding it back. It was the owners.
Oh, yeah, because Doug Williams was he was also from Grambling. Well, he wasn't from Grambling. He went to Grambling, Louisiana, to the school. And his brother, I just mentioned, Michael, was 5'11", had to come to Canada to play, football. John Henry Jackson, who used to own the Underground Railroad, he came from Georgia, and he came up here and played with the Canadian Football League and made quite a name for himself.
Yeah, and we always have to say Warren Moon. My goodness, he ought to be one of the 10 greatest even now. His numbers were good enough, and everybody understood that he came in after a whole career in Canada, and then he set records in the U.S.
Right.
So, I think it's embarrassing, but I think that there already ought to be some sort of campaign to acknowledge, because look what we lost. We didn't get to see the best. We saw what the owners wanted to put on the field in order to satisfy their own business and monopoly relationship, but we were not seeing the best in the years of exclusion of black athletes.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Yeah. We're talking to Norman Otis Richmond. Incidentally, the quarterback I was referring to, that's Lamar Jackson. And here we are. This is 2020 now. His great year, 2019, in the NFL MVP. His mother reminds everybody she had to insist her son was going to be a quarterback and not a wide receiver when a bunch of coaches said, you're a young man and black, and you run real fast, so we're going to make you a wide receiver. Why not a quarterback? I mean, here we are, 2020, right? And we still have to hear these stories.
Yep, 2020, yeah, because, I mean, the quarterback is a thinking person. I think Jesse Jackson was a quarterback, and I think Allen Iverson, the great basketball player, was a hell of a quarterback. And you know, the whole question I guess you're supposed to be a thinker in order to be a quarterback. And
that was another category that white supremacy did not want to have dismantled. You remember the famous exchange with Ted Koppel? The guy had actually been a teammate, I think, of Jackie Robinson. And so they were talking about Jackie Robinson's career. And so Ted Koppel said, why are there more black managers now that we've had the integration of baseball? And the guy looked puzzled, and then he said, well, maybe they don't have the mental capacity. That was his last time on television, by the way. But that's really what it was about. Also, you remember also the prejudice that said if you had a black quarterback, the white players wouldn't listen?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. This is pathetic, I mean, to think about. I know you have a story that we need to hear. People have to understand football is actually very dangerous and causes a lot of harm. And so when these people talk and celebrate those wonderful things that are done, the high price, and there's a man named Stone Johnson. You have some thoughts about him. He died as a result of playing in the NFL.
Well, Stone Johnson was born in Dallas, Texas, and he went to school at Grambling University.
Mm-hmm.
And he ran in the 1960 Olympics. I think he placed third in the 200 meters. He anchored the relay, and the Americans, being Americans, messed up on the baton exchange, so they were disqualified. But they actually won the race. And I think Canada had a history of messing up on their batons, and I think France, just an aside, but France this never really had the level of runners that, you know, Jamaica or America or Trinidad had, but they had, they could control the baton, so they never dropped the baton, so they
the
would
trick,
always
the
come
teamwork.
Third, fourth, they would always be in the finals, and they would place because they never dropped the baton. But anyway, Stone Johnson, I met Stone Johnson in 1963 in Grambling, Louisiana. And I had an uncle by the name of Milton Kelly. And my Uncle Milton was the chief of police. he wasn't the chief of police at that time, but when he became the chief of police, this is a side, but he showed me, you know, it was one room, that the jail had one room, and I think at that particular time, I think the, you know, the biggest crime you could commit was somebody got arrested with a joint, you know, or maybe they had too much liquor, some little Mickey Mouse stuff like that. But anyway, yes. I stood on Gremlin's playing field, and my uncle introduced me to, I was with Coach Eddie Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he was one of the winningest college coaches in the history of
I think he
sport.
Is.
And Mr. What's his name? Eddie Robinson. There's a film about the White Tiger. Harry Belafonte played Mr. Robinson. But anyway, so there's Eddie Robinson, my Uncle Milton, myself. I think I'm 13, going on 14, and Stone Johnson. And they introduced me to Stone Johnson. I was like mesmerized because I said I...
Yeah, you wanted to be a sprinter, right? You were a sprinter.
Yeah,
I'm outing you as a sprinter.
Oh yeah, I saw you in Rome,
yeah.
And you you took third in the 200 meters, and you anchored the relay, blah 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 blah, and that was in August of 1963.
Mm-hmm.
Now I went back. I spent that summer in Gremlin, Louisiana, and I came back home. And the first game of the season was the Kansas City Chiefs. I forgot who they were playing against. That's not good. But anyway, Stone Johnson was the punt returner. He got hit and suffered a concussion, and he passed away 9 days later.
Yeah.
And that was the end of my football career. Everybody in my family, with the exception of me, played football and were quite good. And I was terrified because, you know, like I said, I talked to Stone Johnson just like I talked to you.
Yeah. No, the problem is, as anybody watching it can see, you're describing a high speed a runner, somebody with extra acceleration. If he hits a 200-pound guy going the other direction, that's going to hurt.
And I remember there was a guy by the name of Richard Stebbins who went to the same height. He went to the same grammar high school, same middle school, and same high school I went to. Mm-hmm. He went to Gremlin, and he was born in Louisiana, Richard Stebbins. And he ran, when he was 21, he was in the Olympics he ran the third leg of the relay and gave passed the baton to Bob Hayes. They got a gold medal. Mm-hmm. And I think he made the finals of 200 meters. I think the only person he beat it in the 200 meters, I think, was Livio Berute. I think Livio Berute had been the champion the Olympics before. But anyway, and I always wondered, I said, what happened to Richard? He didn't go to the next Olympics because he was only he was only 21. But I found out later that Richard had almost broke his neck playing football.
Yeah.
So that ended his football career. I think he played with the New York Giants for a brief moment.
Yeah. Well, that brings up somebody that we better mention and take our hat off to. That's Colin Kaepernick, who of course had a great performance in the Super Bowl, and that was pretty much the end of the story, because then he, in solidarity with Black Lives Matter and recognition of the issue of police brutality, he took a knee, and Donald Trump said famously, get that SOB off the field, and everybody says it's a free country and you can have an opinion, and it turns out, no, you can't. It's a corporation-dominated sport. Kaepernick, probably, don't you think, maybe it's a blessing he's off the field and he's not getting his head hammered, and he's become an international cause celeb.
Oh, yeah, from Africa to all over the world, yeah. And I remember he went to Ghana and was well received in Ghana, and you know they love him in many people love him in the Caribbean, love him in Canada, love him in the United States, and just as many people love him that probably more people in the world love him than hate him, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and he has a Twitter account. I have to say it is great for Black history, and he also tells us about the business, you know, the way the capitalists run football, baseball, basketball, make fortunes off the young players that they exploit.
His partner is she from Egypt or from? His partner is very, very politically astute, and some of the racist rednecks are basically saying she's doing the thinking, and she's basically the one behind the show. I forgot her name.
Actually, I don't know the name of his partner, but I do know that they are a political team. But anybody watches Kaepernick and listens to him knows that he's got a mind of his own, and he's handled this very, very well. It's, you know, this, they have designed this little dispute with him to destroy him. I mean, they want him gone. He's is close to kind of a mafia solution as you can get. He's like Jack Johnson and others. I mean, if once you're out of line, they start thinking of how to get rid of you. I better ask you one other question here before I
run out of time.
Yeah, before we run out of time, Kobe Bryant, what is his impact? Have you been thinking about Kobe?
Kobe Bryant is the impact that Kobe had was unbelievable because he is a global icon and politically. He, I don't know if he was a Colin Kaepernick politically, but I know that he was a great businessman, and he also did a lot of things, behind the scenes. But I think I remember Kobe Bryant as a hard working competitor. Mm-hmm. I mean, his work ethic was off of the charts.
Mm-hmm.
And his intellect was off of the charts. I mean, I've seen tapes of him speaking English, French, Spanish, and then he was running. He did a little ni hao. Someone asked him, said ni hao to him, and ni hao. I think the answer is thank you very much. I think it's shia shia, but Kobe hit him back with ni hao. So I don't know if he could actually.
Yeah, that's right. He sent this year a New Year's greeting, one of the last things he did, to China in Chinese.
Oh, okay. Because
he had a little statement, and he knew how to handle it. You're right. He had an international perspective. He liked the idea of developing business and playing basketball in China, which, of course, from the point of view of the American rulers, that's a kind of problematic. They start worrying about it. And you know another thing? His father played in Italy because he wanted to extend his career. So Kobe spoke Italian fluently.
Oh no, he didn't.
They really liked him in Europe.
He spoke Italian better than I could speak English.
Yeah. Well, I think that's an arguable point. But anyhow, Otis, it's been great talking to you. We got to get back to you on a lot of these issues, and I think you've really underlined why Black History Month is important to maintain. Thanks very much.
You're welcome. Take care.
Okay. Bye bye. That was Norman Otis Richmond. Now we have the other guy who sang Kansas City. We'll keep celebrating that win.
I'm going to Kansas City. Kansas City, here I come.